Greetings and welcome to the Pure Report. I'm your host, Rob Ludeman. It is time to bring the orange. And I realize it has been a little bit busy this year, so it is great to crank out another episode. And I think you're going to enjoy this one because we are bringing to you Rich Barlow, who is one of our principal technologists and a little bit newer to Pure. But Rich, welcome to the program.
It's good to be here, Rob. I've been with Pure now, I believe, 10 months. 10-ish months, something like that. So not quite a year. It's been a very eye-opening 10 months, I have to say.
And that's what we're going to explore. I love when you brought this to me and we got to spend some time back in December at Gartner IOCS. So I'd love to get your thoughts around that. And I briefly bumped into you last week at sales kickoff. It really is one of those things about sales kickoff where you're really excited because you're going to see all these people in person, and then you mostly just sort of wave at them in passing or kind of say hello or give a hug or, exactly. That's it. And that's why we're here, on the podcast, because we got to actually spend some good quality time with you. Did you have a good time last week at the sales kickoff?
I had a great time. It was, this is, and I'll talk about my history later, this is my fourth iteration of sales kickoff. I work for four different manufacturing companies now. And I will say this one was, it wasn't the drunken craziness of some of the sales kickoffs. Yeah. It wasn't the button down weirdness of some of the sales kickoffs. It was fun. It was great to finally meet people. And what's surprising to me as a guy who's only 5'9", is how tall everybody is. It's shocking. Why are they so daggone tall? Come on.
Zoom and video conferencing has a way of letting us underestimate heights, I guess, because all we see are a torso and a head, and that's about it. And you make a great point about sales kickoff. I think that's something that's evolved as a company. I'm still thrilled that we have the opportunity to do that. Certainly it was easier when I started 6 or 7 years ago and we were maybe just sending hundreds of people to a singular location. And now you're talking, close to a couple thousand that we had in a single location. We're out in Nashville, which was kind of a lot of fun, but that we still get to get everybody together. And I know you're busy coming off of that as well, because you do bump into people that don't know you exist, and all of a sudden they know you exist and they know you can do things that can help them out. And so I imagine your dance card's getting a little full right now.
Absolutely. It was interesting because I've been engaged last 10 months. I've been engaged with a lot of people, but it's amazing how many people I didn't know that I could engage, right? I'd bump into somebody like, hey, are you Rich Barlow? I'm like, yeah, I'm Rich. And I'd shake their hand and come to find out there's some other segment. There's some other piece of the puzzle that I hadn't really heard of yet. So it was very exciting. It's good to be home. It's good to get back to normal, but it was very cool to be there.
Well, yeah, and back to normal now includes getting ready for Accelerate, something that that I'm deeply engaged with right now. But glad you're on board for your first SCO, since I think you missed it last year. You alluded to your work history, your work background. I know you spent some time. I mean, you come to us now and you work as a principal technologist. Many on that listen to the program are familiar with folks like J.D. Wallace and Andrew Miller and others that have had on from time to time, Nick Psaki and the principal technologist, just one of my favorite teams to work with, because you all are miles wide and miles deep in terms of your knowledge in and around. I would not just say storage, but just technology in general, IT trends in general, and very versatile. So we're certainly thrilled and it's great to have you here. But what brought you here and what was your experience leading up to joining us in the orange here?
So what brought me here, and this is interesting. I'll give you my work history in a second, but specifically why I came here is I saw Pure as a company that's still innovating. I've worked for a bunch of other manufacturers, and honestly, the innovation stopped a long time ago, and they're just incrementally changing the product they already have, whereas Pure is still releasing brand new products. They're still innovating, and as a principal technologist, that's very exciting to me, right? So going back in time, my first computer job was in college. I actually ran a bunch of Sun servers for my university.
Right.
Depot as a computer guy, I worked for AT&T as a computer guy. I've done computer jobs pretty much my whole life. My first, I guess, big job was I was the system architect for Virginia Credit Union, which is a $5 billion credit union. Eventually got promoted to CTO there. After that, I went to NetApp and I was a consulting system engineer, which means I really focused on virtualization at the time. I was a kind of a VMware person. Spent about 6 years there. Then I went to EMC. EMC, I got hired by Chad Sackett. Remember Chad?
Vaguely.
He was the Yeah, Chad was the madman in charge of the V specialist group back
Ah,
then.
okay. So still the VMware thing. Yeah.
Still a VMware thing, right? I mean, it's, focused on storage, but
Sure.
specifically for VMware, right? So that worked for Chad for a number of years. Then I became a partner principal. I was elected a principal engineer in that time. All this stuff happened. And then Dell acquired EMC. I like to say it's a job that I never applied for, but I got anyway. I was now a principal for Dell. I became the Dell principal architect for North America. So I did all the, I like to say the weird stuff, which is going to be the more complex deals that have a lot of, well, weirdness in them, of everyone in the US and Canada. So I did that. And finally, I hopped over to Pure about 10 months ago.
It is great to have you and have that background and experience. It is so interesting how many of these roles start out as, I was the computer guy, or I ran the IT, real estate, the server farm, the whatever, and then you kind of navigate. And I love some of you guys are just really good at and gals are great at just at talking, right? At just going and understanding the problem. And you mentioned those weird problems, those complex problems. Those are the things that I think get people like you and your roles kind of up out of bed every day to go and solve and figure out. And I'm certainly you're focusing in SLED, right? That's our state local education function, and obviously you're at the Virginia Credit Union, so not too far from that space, right? But it's always great to have something. I think why we brought you on today is it's fun to look after 10 months. I just did an episode where we had two people that were here for 10 years, right? Joe Reynolds and John Owings, and so we were doing some fun history. But it's also great to get the perspectives of those that are newer, and you actually made a choice and had a reason to come here, and so we're going to navigate through, a few different areas of things that I think the way you described it when we were pre-briefing was things that were unexpected or things that were surprising. And I use that analogy of the stained glass window, right? Is it looks really beautiful from one side, and then the other side you kind of see different things. It's just kind of dark, and you're obviously seeing some of the bright side of the things that you weren't really sure, or maybe that were kind of advertised. Before we dive into those, I wanted to go back to Gartner IOCS, because I know that was when we first started talking about doing something like this. And that was a little bit about, I think, the unexpected. What was your take on the people that were coming up to the booth and talking to us? Like, how did that contrast from other events you'd went to? Because for me, and I have my opinion on it because I love doing events for that reason, but what jumped out at you?
So it was very different. So I've been to many conferences in my life, right? I mean, I used to go to, I went to every VMworld, went to every EMC World, every Dell World, all that kind of stuff. I've been to Cisco Live. I've been to the Oracle conferences. Been to all of them. What was different about IOCS is the people that came to the booth were actually asking hard strategic questions. They would actually engage you in conversation about real problems that they were facing in their industry, right? And it was. A lot of times I would sit there and have to think for a few minutes. It
All right.
wasn't just people coming by to get more Pure swag, right? Or NetApp or Dell swag, which is usually what these events are. The partner exchange is where you wander after class and you get some swag to take back to your kids. It was nothing like that. We ran out of swag in the first, what, 4 hours?
Yeah, went pretty
Right?
quickly. We
Which was
needed
pretty awesome.
it.
I had no problem with it. We got busy, but
That's
the swaggers came in, I guess. I don't know how
right.
you call those people. But after that, we stayed busy with people asking deeply strategic questions about how they're going to run their organization. I was shocked. Now I was pleasantly shocked. And honestly, Rob, I want to go back next year. I will say, once you go to one VMworld, you've kind of been to all of them. They're all pretty much the same. This was different.
That's what I love about the Gartner IOCS conference too, is you do have it is infrastructure operations, and they're primary leaders. They're the ones who are sort of at the intersection of the top, the VPC level, and the hands-on practitioners. They're right in the middle. And so really what we're trying to do is, can we help them with their business priorities, right? What are the priorities to support the business? So it's not quite, how do I do X with a product or a solution? And it's not quite, how do you help the company save a whole bunch of money or reduce risk? It's somewhere right in the middle, which is where you guys shine. I think the part that stood out for me that was hilarious, and I don't think I, hilarious in a good way, we had a customer there who was speaking with us. I don't think I name the company, although he was there, United Wholesale Mortgage, Ed. Ed was with us. And the craziest and most wonderful part was that Ed just started hanging out at our booth.
Yep.
right? I mean, he was going to sessions, but when he wasn't at sessions, he was hanging at our booth. And there were probably two different conversations I had where people started getting deep, as you say, into serious, complicated problems. And Ed kind of just was listening, and he tapped me on the shoulder and he went, "Rob, can I take this one?" I went, "Have at it, Ed." And Ed goes, "Hey, I did this exact thing. You know, here's how we did it." And it was just so great to see the person at the booth that was visiting us kind of light up. And we just facilitated this conversation between one of our passionate advocates and a prospect that got to learn a little bit more. And that's really what it's all about.
I tell you, we'll get to this later. But this is one of my surprises, is how much people that love pure love pure. It's, we're not, I say we're not tolerated, we're loved. I've worked for vendors that were tolerated, they're put up with. It works. Pure is loved. People who love our stuff love it. And like, for example, Ed loved it and he was willing to talk to other people about it. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was super cool. And that'll be a book again. That'll be the one that we catch or come back and circle back to at the end. All right, let's dive into the big three. And there's sub bullets for each of these as we navigate through, just to let everybody get kind of a roadmap for where we're going. We're going to be looking at things that were unexpected to you, the Rich Barlow, and look at architectural elements. We'll look at the engineering philosophy and then the operations side. We'll look at those three and just give people a little bit of a glimpse behind the curtain as to what we do here, but also your sort of only 10 months biased opinion and coming after probably what, 2 decades or more at other manufacturers. I'm being kind there. It's probably more than that. I'm definitely 3 decades into this business. But let's hit on the architecture first. I feel like when we were at Gartner and we had a little bit of downtime, that was the part we talked about most. Is just the nature of Evergreen and then that philosophy starting from there. But what'd you learn in the first months or even just the 10-month spell that you've had starting around the architectural side?
Well, so when you work for any manufacturer, you get surrounded by market speak, and you rapidly, as an engineer, which I'm an engineer, I'm not a salesperson really, I'm an engineer. So you rapidly learn to separate mentally the market speak from what actually works, right? And what's been amazing to me here at Pure is that the market speak is what actually works. It's different. Fundamentally different. And the biggest area that's different is Evergreen. So I was used to us talking about, well, we're non-disruptive and we have all these upgrades. We do all this stuff that's non-disruptive. But we knew as engineers, yeah, we're going to rip your disks out. That's going to be disruptive. Or if it's not disruptive, at least we're going to throw away a whole truckload of really good disks. There's nothing wrong with them, but that's not how we do it. We can replace the entire system, not just the controllers, right? So when I first started, I heard the market speak, right? I heard it, but I didn't believe it. I didn't believe it. I'm like, we're just going to tell people this to get them to buy the stuff, right? So we were at a very large corrections facility. This is where it kind of sunk in for me, that moment it hit me. And a very large corrections facility. And there was these grizzled two old dudes in the room, and we were basically talking to nobody because they were not really paying much of attention. They were ex-police officers. They'd heard it all from every vendor in the world, and they were very non-technical. They didn't care. And so the SE got up, and SE was talking about Evergreen, and he told the Evergreen story that, look, our stuff is meant to last at least a decade. That we will do field replacement for the parts all non-disruptively, where basically every 3 years you get a brand new array. Get a brand new array every 3 years, so you're never technically in debt. And we can replace the drives if you need them, and we can replace them as non-disruptively as well. But we don't have to come in and rip your entire array out and put a new array in like everybody else does. And this grizzled dude, I noticed we're getting his attention. He looked up at us and he said, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, stop. Just stop. You're telling me if I buy this, I don't ever have to do this replacement again." And this is for a very large video management system. So it's tens of petabytes of video. And we said, "Yes, sir." Well, at least the SE said, "Yes, sir." And he sat and showed us why. He talked through why it is controller replacement, everything's stateless, and all the stuff. And by the end of it, this dude looked me, and I don't know why he looked at me. I'm a new guy in the room. He looked me in the eyes and said, "If they can do this, why would you buy anything else?" And I was shocked. I sat there for a second. I said, "Wait a minute, this stuff's real. It works." And at the same time, it popped in my head. Renee, I can't remember his last name, for Delta a couple of years ago. Kind of, And I apologize to memorize his last name. I should. He got up on stage and kind of went off script and said, look, you know, this Evergreen thing is real. We upgrade arrays with planes in the sky now because it just works. I remember Kaz talking about this and all this kind of flooding into my head at the same time. I remember Kaz, who's one of the founders of the company. He got up and he threw a slide up and he said, these are the first six arrays we ever sold. First six arrays we ever sold at Pure. Of those six arrays, five of them are still in production with zero technical debt, with over 70 software upgrades, with brand new guts. They've changed the disks out behind them three times now, and they're still the same array running the same jobs. That's unheard of. You can't go to anywhere else and get that story, Rob. That doesn't make any sense at those other places. It's just that's completely irrational. That's not how sales happen. Every 3 to 5 years, you show up and you get a big capital purchase, right? That's the business model.
That's the model.
We're going to rip everything out. We're going to replace it with something new every 3 to 5 years. That's it. That's how it works. That's how storage worked. Well, Kaz sat back and said, no, we're going to disrupt that model. And it works. Been here 10 months now, and I've seen tons of these. They just work. I've done it in my own lab. I kind of was a little skeptical. So I got my own equipment here in my house. It works. Very cool.
Yeah. Well, we had that fun video at Sales Kickoff last week too, if you remember, that we put up there where the peak team, the you know, customer experience team went off to a customer that had one of the first, probably one of those first six arrays that you're talking about, right? FA300. And they actually hadn't done anything with it for 10 years. Now, if you want to do that, that's fine. Like, we'd love people to, you know, keep them upgraded over time, but it ran and they didn't need to do anything. But we went in and did a 10-year, you know, a 10-year Evergreen upgrade for them from an FA300 to current, non-disruptive, right? And now they're getting better performance, better everything out of it. But that was, you know, that was fantastic. Another thing that came to me when you were describing that was the quote that Sean Rosmarin put up last week. And I think it's incorrectly attributed to Gandhi, but you know, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win, right? And I feel like at least of the 6 to 6.5 years that I've been here, I've been through some of the ignore you and then the laugh at you, haha, you can't really do that. And then all of a sudden we're in the crosshairs the last 3 or 4 years, yep. And now we're starting to win. It's kind of fun. I know.
Let me throw one more story in, because I think this was fun. This is the one that's had the most mental impact on me. I feel like I'm doing good working here. I feel like I'm doing something different. Mm-hmm. I live in Richmond, Virginia, and there's a very large power company that runs all the power around here, right? So back when I worked for one of the other vendors, I went and took a walk through a data center, and they had what we called, now they literally called this themselves, they called it the storage museum. They have one of every kind of storage array from every manufacturer that's ever been made still running. And they're ancient things, like ancient things, and they're all still have data. And if they had Pure, that would all be brand new, up-to-date hardware.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be a museum. It would be much better performing than it ever was. They'd have new software features. We don't charge for our software features. They'd have all these new features running in their arrays, and it wouldn't be a museum. Zero, imagine this, zero technical debt forever.
Yeah.
That's crazy talk.
Yeah, it is. Well, and closely related to that was one of the other things we talked about at Gartner ICS, and you carry these along with you, right? Was the Direct Flash module, right? The DFM. You're probably going to hold one up. There you go, holding one up. Great podcast for everybody, since you can't see anything. But Rich is right now. He's got it.
I forget my media flash, sometimes.
Yeah, he's got a Direct Flash module just sitting on his desk that he held up for me, and he had them in his bag at Gartner ICS, and they go everywhere. They're just a great talking piece, but it also is the second part of the architecture that I think you were pleasantly surprised, or that was unexpected, that competitors can't really do, because they're using off the shelf, they're using SSDs, which, you know, we talk about pretty publicly. Those are driven by a different industry. Those are driven by what the PC market and server market want, and we have a different philosophy around that, is that we can do better things by doing custom design, and geez, we're driving the density of those. I mean, that's something that you're really excited about, I know.
Absolutely. So this is why I came here. So I knew what a DFM, I knew what a Direct Flash module or DFM was. I knew what it was. It was no big surprise what this thing was. But now that I'm here and can see behind the curtain some, it's amazing how forward thinking they are. It's amazing to me how forward thinking they are. The idea, somebody said, you know what? What is the limitation? What is the problem? Most people think it's the controllers, right? And if you look at any of the other manufacturers, you'll see that they have all these crazy controller designs, right? But they all use the same discs. In the end, they're just using Samsung, whatever, Kioxia, if they're using SCM, they're using these regular drives. We're not. We thought differently. We said, you know what? The actual problem is the media. And they designed their own drive. And because of that, it frees us from all the limitations of traditional flash drives. Traditional flash drives have to have a certain amount of RAM inside them to keep track of the block allocation table, basically the flash layer, translation layer, has to keep track of that stuff in RAM. The problem is there's a limit on how much RAM you can shove into a slot, right? And also it's very power hungry. DRAM is the most power hungry thing, one of the most power hungry things around. So we get around that. Our direct flash modules, they don't have DRAM. They don't need it because the CPU inside the controller is talking directly to every NAND chip inside that box. And because of that, it can do very intelligent things with layout, very intelligent things with reads and writes, things that literally, and I mean this, no one else can do. Nobody else can do what we do. And I'll mention a competitor here because I'm not saying anything bad about them. NetApp has their data on tap and Waffle, right? Cool file system, does neat things, right? And it has its own little derivation for flash. EMC slash Dell, they have what they do with flash, but in the end, they're doing it to the same hardware. NetApp, EMC, Dell all use the same drives from the same manufacturers. There's only three in the world, really. Three manufacturers, four if you count people who make storage class memory now, right? So four major manufacturers in the world, they all use the same stuff. We did different. Because of that, we had much fewer supply constraints through COVID, by the way, which I worked for when I was working for Dell through COVID. And man, let me tell you, we had some serious supply problems. We make our own. We, as long as we have boxes of NAND chips, we can make drives. Very cool. And the scale of them is getting crazy.
It is. Yeah, the scale is huge, and Kaz always loves showing up and talking about those whenever he can. But the other part of it that gets really interesting is you alluded to this was the flash storage operating system. Let's just use sort of a generic term. The hardware on its own is kind of fun, but without the OS or without the software, the Purity part, it's a brick. Right.
That's
And so
right.
that's the part that gets really powerful. And it has been very interesting hearing stories over the last few years. We mentioned in earnings calls, hyperscalers. We don't have to get into the specific ones, but you go out to those hyperscalers who typically have a, we're going to build it ourselves. And I ran into this when we were at Sun too, where, we go out and go, hey, we got this really cool server. And they go, eh, we buy our own PCB boards, we buy our own components, we build them together. And we had a couple of those in the last few years that we engaged with, and we showed them what we did, and they went, nah, we're good. And they went off and did it for 9 months to a year or longer. And then they came back. They went, you know what? The hardware design part, we can kind of do that. Where it's going to take us 3 to 5 years is all the software design, the OS. You guys have already been doing that from the start, so let's talk. And that's the part that gets really powerful when you combine the DFMs with the storage, the flash storage operating system. And that's what has me thinking really brightly for the future too, right? That's going to be a big
Absolutely.
advantage.
I
That
mean,
and yeah.
I'm buying as much Pure stock as I can, as they'll let me, because I have because where I sit in the company, there are some limitations when I can buy and sell sort of thing. But when I have the ability to buy, I'm buying, period.
Disclosure statement for the SEC out there for Rich Barlow.
Love it.
Final one under architecture, and we hit on this because it goes into your stories from before, but the non-disruptive upgrade piece, right? And we do see competitors that are claiming that, or they've adapted that into certain parts of the portfolio, but I still think that it's challenging just given the legacy architectures that they're running on. You've been there, you've seen that.
Absolutely. So let me tell you, and once again, I'm not bashing competitors. I mean, they make their own gear. I'm not talking bad about anyone here. I'm just stating the truth. And I would ask the folks that are listening to this to ask yourself, when's the last time anybody other than Pure offered to update your controllers and leave your disks in place? In other words, what they usually want to do is sell you a new array, which is controllers and disks, the whole nine yards, right? What's wrong with the disks you got? There's something wrong with those disks? Are they worn out? Are they going to explode or something? We designed from the beginning, from like literally the one of the first design things that went into building Purity and the hardware we work it on, is there's no legacy heritage. We don't have any old, and I'll throw competitors' stuff in here. We don't have older versions of PowerMax support, which are different hardware. We don't have older versions of PowerStore, VNX, or whatever, Array du jour. We don't have to support that stuff. We started from the beginning in a world that was A, all flash, and B, expecting non-disruptive upgrades for everything, period, end of story. And it was written that way. So, for example, our controllers are completely stateless. And I did this myself. Honestly, Rob, as an engineer, I had to do it myself once, right? So I ordered, and we have this thing where we can get old hardware shipped to our homes. And I sh had two storage arrays, two older storage arrays shipped to my house, and they're in my basement. And I got them to send me four newer controllers. They're not new. They're newer than the stuff they
They're new
sent
to
me.
you. They're new to
Yeah,
you.
they're new to the Casa del Barlo, right? So I did a non-disruptive upgrade myself, and I was shocked at how easy it was. I was shocked. I was like, holy frijoles, this is all there is? This is what it takes? Because our founders built that in from the beginning. They're not 15, 20 years later seeing this company called Pure nipping at their heels and going, oh man, we got to do this now. And then trying to retrofit it into a legacy hardware and legacy software environment.
Yeah, good observation. It's fun to know you have a lab that's tucked away down in the Casa de Barlo as well. Yes, yeah, evil.
Yeah, when I turn it on, you can basically see all the lights now. It's dim at this point. And
Oh
it's
yeah.
not the flash arrays. The flash arrays use no power at all. It's all the servers and the 10 gig switches, and that stuff eats tons of power.
All that good stuff. It's fun. It's fun that you have those toys. So that is the architecture component, everyone. You get Mr. Barlow's perspectives and comparisons. And again, we're just trying to be really factual about things that that Rich knows and has seen over time. Let's dive into the engineering. And you did make a point earlier about the, I don't know, not lack of investment, but not the aggressive investment, right, in engineering and R&D. And I think we even talk about that and various earnings calls or other things where you can look at the level of investment as a percentage of revenue for us tends to be around the 2x or even higher than our competitors, which run about 5 or 6%. And I think we're in the, in the teens, which shows, right, that we still believe there is innovation in this space, right? Some may think, oh, well, storage, it's just storage. There's not much more you can do. No, we see a bright future and the reason to continue innovating. But you've now also been here 10 months. What's the relationship like with engineering? What have you seen how that operates? Because engineering can be an egotistical thing. It can be a we know better than you.
Right.
Also, there are companies that are purely driven by engineering without much outside input. What's your take around the different ideas that you see coming out of engineering?
It's so, I mean, I can go all over the place with this one because this is close to my heart because I am a principal technologist. So I am that layer that listens to the field and takes it to product management, and the product management talks to us so we can take it back to the field. There's an interface layer, otherwise the poor product managers would get overwhelmed by the field, right? So we give them like an API, right? So I can tell you that other places that I have worked, there's been very little interaction between engineering. Engineering would have outputs but no inputs. It was here's a new product or not a new product. I don't think I've saw many new products being released in the whole time I was at all those other manufacturers, but there would be here's a new feature. Here's a new version of X. Here is a new compression algorithm. But there was very little that flowed in the other direction that came back from the field. Pure has an entire layer built specifically for that. Anybody in Pure can have a great idea, and that great idea will make it to the founder of the company. The founder is on Slack. I have Slacked Kaz many times myself, and he answers back, usually telling me I'm crazy, but that's just Kaz, right? He's a very direct fellow. I love the guy. Smarter than I am, that's for darn sure. But talking about Kaz is the reason why I think that the good ideas supersede hierarchy, why it still works here. Because the founder of our company, who started as an engineer, he built a Veritas file system, right? He's actually an engineer. He's not an investor. He's an engineer. He still is here guiding this company. And as a guide, he's going to listen to engineers in the field. He's going to listen to engineers that are customers. He's going to listen to his own engineering teams and come up with answers. He did it for a lot of living. He did this thing for real. And because of that, it's more of a real world. More of a what's the right word? It's like we're mixing the pot harder here, and because of that, we're coming out with a lot of cool stuff. So, when the entire time I was at the other places, I saw very few new products, truly new. Like there would be a version of X or version of Y, but new products, far and few in between. This year, if we stay on track, Rob, and I'm gonna keep my mouth shut, no futures here, but we're probably gonna see 2 to 3 new products be released. That's amazing. That's astounding. That is unbelievable. And these aren't just little extensions of old products or like a version two. These are new. That's mind-blowing, man.
Yeah, well, one only need to look partly at the Evergreen One SLA roadmap, right, to see where there's just a constant pace of innovation and new value-added features. But it also has me reflect on what we talked about kind of early at the top of the episode about how customers love us and are so passionate. A lot of these ideas come directly from customers too, right? You may just be a translation mechanism or a communication conduit back into engineering and back into cause, but I know we have some really tight relationships with some pretty large and substantial customers who are kind of saying, this works really well, but what if X, right? What if X? And then we go scratch our heads and go, I think we could consider how to do X. And so you get this really nice bi-directional channel where we're not just building features in an ether, but we actually have multiple layers. You, the principal technologists, are great FSAs, the SEs, technical roles, product managers, but also then directly from customers. And I guess I'd throw in partners too, right? Or who are hu really huge within our ecosystem, giving us good feedback, which is super cool. Well, that's a great perspective that you provide there. All right, the next one I'm just going to open up kind of open-ended on you because I don't have the context behind it, but you sent me in quotes, "The best part is no part."
That's
And I
an
don't know
Elon
if that's
Musk quote.
related, but what's that?
That's an
Oh, that's
Elon
a
Musk
must. That's
quote.
right. That's right. So where were you going with that relative to what we can do and that competitors maybe say they can, but can't?
So what do you see when you look at any electronic device? Generally, there's an on-off button. Button to
Oh,
power on, right? There's no on-off button on a Pure Array. There's no user-level command to shut it down. If you go into the CLI, if you go into the GUI, there's no command in the GUI to turn the array off. So how do you turn off a Pure Array? You walk around behind it and you pull the power cables out.
I'll get unplug it.
Well, that is a different way to think. Because if you truly trust your RAID array, your RAID, you truly trust your NVRAM, you truly trust the parts inside your array, that's how you should turn them off, is by unplugging them. Because honestly, if everything works, you're going to have power outages in the real world, right? Yes. Why not constantly test that? Every time you unplug your array, you're testing us, is what you're doing. You're testing us. Guess what? We don't fail that test. We don't fail that test because we've done it so many times. So there's two pieces of this. Number one is that the people who founded this company and the people in our engineering department refuse to follow the status quo. Every freaking electronic device has a on-off button. We don't have one. That is a small thing, but it's part of a much larger idea that we do not accept the status quo and we rethink things from the ground up. Not what does everybody else do? It's why don't we do this different in a way that's better for the customer? The second part of it is if you're going to build something that's fundamentally different, right? And it's different than everything else that's been put out, go back and look at your first principles and say to yourself, what is important? For a storage array, data loss is the worst possible thing. So if I trust my array so powerfully, I should be able to rip the power plugs out of it at any time. And we do that. That's how you turn them off. You unplug them. And I love that. That's once again, that's a tiny little thing. I mean, that's a small example of a huge group of ideas inside of these arrays. The way we do synchronous replication is different. The way we do async is different. The way we do snapshots is different. Because we thought from first principles, not from how I did it 15 years ago in array B, and now I'm working on array D, and I'm going to try to drag that code into this array. Didn't work that way.
Fix everything that's wrong with storage, right? The engineering philosophy, the mantra, and that forces you to think differently. And I will do a blatant plug right now, since Rich is alluding to some of those architectural principles. If you do a search in the podcast archives in the episode for the Pure Report, and you look for the word unplugged, that is the series that JD Wallace and Andrew Miller and I have been doing over the course of, gosh, probably the last 2 to 2.5 years where we've gone through the 15 architectural design principles, and I think we're on 13 or maybe 14 we've navigated through, but those are the principles that go back over a decade around which the company was founded that are the things that we believe in from an engineering philosophy that still hold today. And with those unplugged episodes, we cover some other things, but the heart of each one of those is tackling one of those architectural principles. You know, how do we deal with metadata or things like that, right? So those are cool if you want to go back and check those out. We won't have time to dive into them super deeply here. Final thought in this area around engineering and customer experience, and I think this is maybe leaning towards more of the post-sales type of approach and how that differs from maybe what the competition does, where you know they get a sale and then that's good enough, and you know what's the white glove treatment really needed for, because we got the deal and we're going to come back in 3 to 5 years and you know try to get that forklift upgrade going.
Well, there's kind of two pieces of this. One piece is what you're alluding to, that every Pure customer is a white glove customer because we're going to be back, not to sell you something, but to give you something. Right. So in 3 years, when you get the if you buy the Evergreen Forever package, which are, in my book, you're kind of nuts if you don't. The TCO is there for it. It's there. It just takes 6 years rather than three. So do a 6 year TCO, you'll see it obviously saving you money. We'll be back in 3 years to give you something for free and give you brand new controllers, latest CPUs, all the PCIe upgrades, all the new software upgrades, everything for free in 3 years. So to me, that means that the Pure is very motivated to treat all of its customers very well because we can't walk away from you. We can't walk away. We have tons of customers. I've worked at other places where, man, I knew once the sale was done, I'd never see these guys again. That's not the way Pure works, right? The second part of it is it fundamentally goes back to the way we release new stuff. I've worked for some other manufacturers that when they release something, it would be feature complete. I mean, everything's there, everything you possibly imagine would be there, but it couldn't be tested that rigorously. If you got 1,000 new features, how in the world do you test all that stuff rigorously, right? When you see Pure release something new, we tend to release something that's very, I don't want to say feature incomplete, but it's going to be the minimum viable product. And we put it out there and we make sure that all those pieces work, period. And then we slowly add things to it. Sorry, Rob, but the marketing people hate that because they can't go on and say they've got feature X, Y, Z, Q, B, D, F, and Z from this one RFP response. But engineering, because it's still run by a guy who did this in the real world, it's going to say, nope, we're going to slowly do this to make sure that the pieces we make meet our customer service expectations, right? Our customer experience needs to be first. So let's make sure their experience is good. So even if we lose some deals because we don't have, I don't know, we don't have NFS 4.0. Who uses 4.0? Everybody uses 4.1, right? You don't, but sometimes you need an RFP for a university. It wants some weird protocol. And we have to say, no, we're not just going to toss it in there because, hey, yeah, we wrote it overnight, because you said you needed it. We imported something from GitHub and made it work. That's not the way we work. Everything's rigorously tested. So you'll see us slowly introduce features, not quickly.
Great perspective, right? To see that, because there are different differing philosophies around that. And I don't mind being in marketing, right? Because eventually we do get those mature features after they're tested and used and put through what they need to go through. And then we can go, okay, great. We have this, we have this thing. But that was I recall back when I joined was around the time that Active Cluster was finally released. But when I went back and looked in the archives of how long we'd been talking about it and how long we'd been, betaing it with customers and running it and then tuning it, fixing it, it'd been a matter of like a couple years. And then
Absolutely.
finally, it was out. And then we did a big, big thing about it. But it wasn't like it was here, it's brand new, put it into the wild and we'll see what breaks and then fix it. There had already been a huge period of time where we were checking it out with, again, those very willing customers who are passionate to work with us because they know that there will be an end benefit for them that helps their business run better.
Well, the good thing about this, though, let me. I realized looking back what I just said, it sounds like I'm saying something almost negative, saying we're slow to introduce features. I'm not. I'm saying you can buy a new Pure product and be very confident. A lot of customers are like, yeah, I don't buy a product till version 2 or version 3. I don't install a new ESX till there's been 3 updates, right? It's that kind of, that's not the way Pure is. You don't have to worry like that. We know that our stuff works. We know that our stuff works because we're going to release features slow enough so that we can test all the features in the real world. So you can be very confident when we come out with something new. Like for example, FlashArray has been around for 10 years now. FlashArray, especially on the block side, is feature complete. There's nothing left to add to it. But those features, like you said, like Active Cluster, we added them slowly so that the customers would not get dissatisfied. Let's put it the nicest way possible. It works.
Love that. All right, let's hit the third one of your pillars around operations. I'm really interested to dive into this one, right? Because again, you mentioned being from the outside and reading the various marketing materials, marketecture, I think you used early on, and everybody says a lot of things about their products, but in terms of operations and being the simplest, or I've always talked about this from the time I interviewed Kaz on the podcast. He said, Rob, it's not simplicity, right? Simplicity is perhaps the outcome, but what we've done is made it intuitive, right? Intuitive, again, back to not having the power button and things like that. So what did you discover coming into Pure relative to the simplicity or the intuitive nature of the products that you perhaps thought was different, and how that differs from what you're used to?
So, a little about myself, right? I am a propeller-headed knob twiddler. I am. I love nerd knobs. I love to go into something that's really complicated, figure out all the little things mean. I mean, I'm PowerMax Speed certified, which means I know where all the nerd knobs are in PowerMax. I love that stuff. And so those of you listening that love those things as well, don't take this as being a negative thing. There's actually a lot of positivity to this. The first time I went into the FlashArray interface and started poking around, the first question I asked the SE is, where are the advanced pages? There's got to be more than this. You mean you just create a LAN connected to a host? That's it. That's all there is. Like, that's it. There's no RAID group selection. There's no ability to monitor how much goes into cache. And the SE laughed at me and said, and he said something that I thought was very powerful. He said, why should humans in 2024 make decisions that are better left to computers? I said, that's pretty smart. So what's happening inside of a FlashArray, it's not a dumb box that just sits there. There's all kinds of tuning going on, but it's happening in second by second. It's happening at a much faster pace than a human could do it. Right. So that array doesn't need you to sit and babysit it and choose RAID settings and all. It doesn't need that. Right. Because in 2024, humans should not be doing that kind of work. For example, this is how straightforward this is. Once I got my two arrays running downstairs, now you mentioned Active Cluster, which is our synchronous replication technology. Now, those of you out there, and I will mention a competitor here that have worked with EMC SRDF or a recover point, if you've set it up, you realize you better read the doggone manual. You better read the manual, especially SRDF, because the bin file changes, there's all kind of stuff has to go on to make SRDF work, right? So I set up Active Cluster myself within 5 minutes with no instructions because it's intuitive. You sit and look, and I scratch my head a few times and like, and I realize all I need to do is take the ID from this array and put it in the box that says other arrays ID, and then say, push the button on which one I want to share and how much bandwidth do I want to give it to sync up. I answered three questions and it was working. Done. That sounds like marketecture. It really does. It's not like I'm being markety. I'm not. I can give this to your probably 10-year-old and they can figure out one of the most complex things in storage, which is sync replication. So if this is what you're doing, right, imagine much time you have left to do things that are important to the business you work for. Right? Does your business care about the little marching ants on your SRDF display? They could care less about that. It's irrelevant. All they want is to have their data available in two places, right? That's what synchronous replication does. Why not get to the outcome? Just get to the outcome, get it done, and then you can start building cool stuff on top of that. If you're a storage person, there's all kinds of neat stuff you can do. It don't require you spending 3 days to set up SRDF, right?
And
So the simplicity of operations blew me away, still blows me away.
what's incredible about that active cluster, since that's the example that we've gone to, is that was again 5 or 6 years ago when I joined, and the big push from the marketing side and how we promote it was, set up your sync rep in 4 steps. and you just joined in the last year and you just got two arrays and put them in, that's 6 years. There's no additional complexity that's gone into that in 6 years, right? The same thing still applies, right? Just
we have a great point, Rob. And we saw this in the last couple of days at Kaz at a kickoff, sales kickoff. He was on stage and he said something that made me go, whoa, 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 wait a second. I had to think about it for a second. He said, features are evil.
Yeah.
This is a quote, features are evil. What he wasn't saying that adding new features to your array is bad. What he's saying is that adding complexity that's useless is bad, is what he was saying. So for example, there's all kinds of, you know, if you mess with any other array replication technology, there's all kinds of options you can set. But in the end, what is the business outcome you're trying to get to? You're trying to get your data synchronously available in two locations, right? Those options really don't help you do that. They're just options, other ways to do it. The array figures it out. Let the array do the work. You go do something else, man. Let the array figure it out. And that's what happens with Pure.
Yeah. And that's probably one of the biggest realizations that users who are brand new to Pure, right, that come to. Just like, well, wait, what do you mean I don't have to go map LUNs and do all these crazy things? And like you said, I think your perspective is really great. I haven't heard anybody put it that way, but in what your SE said is in 2024, why should humans do these things, right? You know, let's have a computer do it. Let's hit on the next one around cloud. You know, we talk here around cloud operating model. And again, we allude to the ability to run using services or subscriptions, right? And again, that's very loaded once we get into that area. But you talk relative to true cloud operations when you move into Evergreen One. And this is a big push for the company right now, is helping people understand and the realization that what we can do is really extract risk out of the equation, and the simple things around risk, like you bought too much or you didn't buy enough, and that creates a panic where you got to go order some, or you're wasting money that could be freed up. But there's a lot more benefits to that. But what do you see when you look at true cloud operations or true cloud operating model and what Evergreen One delivers for users?
So I've worked with lots of different, and I'm making quote fingers you can't see on the podcast, cloud operating models.
Air quotes, yeah.
Air quotes, making them, I have to announce them because you can't see
them. You got it, yeah, yeah.
So cloud operating models over the last 10 years, right? Because the last 10 years is when this cloud operating model became important. And what I've seen in a lot of these cloud operating models are very, very thinly disguised leases. A lease is not a cloud operating model. Yeah. It's just a different way of paying for gear. The reason that lease exists is because the company's unwilling to take the risk of keeping that equipment on their books, right? There's a financial risk to that company because they have a bunch of assets sitting somewhere else. They're not that asset's on their books, right? It goes against their bottom line. Pure, on the other hand, our Evergreen One is truly a cloud operating model. Pure owns it. Pure manages it. Pure takes care of it. Pure updates it. Pure does everything for you. You just consume it like you consume Amazon on premises. For example, let's say you're at Amazon and you need a new flash volume. You go to EBS and you get a flash volume, right? You click, click, clack, and you're done. You don't care about its RAID type. You don't care about where it is. You don't care about the connectivity behind it. All you care is, do I have the throughput and do I have the latency required? That's all you care about. Guess what? That's part of how Evergreen One is managed, is latency and your latency and your throughput. Those are the things you pay for. You have different tier models within this, just like you do at Amazon. Now, we have some other cool things with this I think are mind-blowing. The whole idea that we're going to pay you for the rack space we use and for the power we use. Now, think about that for a minute. So, and I challenge you, ask other competitors to do that. That's a fun conversation to have. So seriously, because think about it. Our gear is sitting in your data center, right? That's what an on-prem cloud model is. It's Pure's or NetApp's or EMC or Dell or whatever. It's their gear in your data center. Shouldn't they pay for the space they take up? Shouldn't they pay for the power they're using? We do. We write you a check for it. That to me says, yeah, this is the cloud, man.
Yeah.
This is the cloud, because trust me, Amazon has to pay its power bills as well. And you're paying them when you pay for that Amazon bill. You're paying for power and cooling and rack space, that kind of stuff you're paying for, right? Another cool thing about this that strikes me as very different is the ability to move those resources from cloud to cloud to on-prem, or from on-prem from cloud then to another cloud. For example, let's say, and I'm just throwing this out here, you buy 100 terabytes of premium Evergreen//One, right? That 100 terabytes, you can put it all on premises. In other words, we come, we put 130 terabytes of storage in because we give you a 30% buffer, and you use that. And once again, all you're doing is just using it like a service. You don't manage it, update it, nothing. None of that stuff happens. And it's truly ours. You're just paying. It's not on your books or anything. And we're giving you money for power and cooling. Let's say that all of a sudden there's a really big push to go to Azure, right? So you could literally take 50 terabytes of the on-premise and tell Pure, hey, I'm moving 50 terabytes of that to Azure. Your price doesn't change. You move 50 terabytes to Azure. No problem. Gotcha. And at Azure, we have FlashArrays. Now they're all software-based. But they're really designed in a very interesting way, and I don't have time right now to talk about it. Maybe that's another one. It's Cloud Block Store.
Let's do another one. Yeah.
We do cool things with this to make them incredibly available. Our Cloud Block Store is probably has higher availability than an on-prem block store. We do six nines on-prem. We guarantee six nines. We really get seven, by the way, but we can't say that out loud. I didn't say that, did I, Rob? That
Yeah. Well,
quietly.
I think our founder said it before, so
Yeah, okay. Well, cost is anything, right? So, but the durability in the cloud is right now between 11 and 12 nines for Cloud Block Store, which is crazy. So anyway, so you can move those licenses around. Let's say you're going from your company decides goes from Azure to AWS. You can move the license to AWS. It's really cool. That to me is what cloud's about. It's about freedom to have choice. And that's what you get.
It's the agility aspect, right? And cloud is, not a destination, right? It's a mode or a model of operating, right? And that's what we've kind of figured out over the last 10 or 12 years, which is great. And again, that's a whole nother episode. We probably should have you come back and we can dig deeper into that as we need to. Let's go ahead and wrap because we said we would hit this one later, but we kind of got there too early, but your last comment, not tolerated by loved, right? But loved, right? And that came out when you were at one of the first couple events we went to. You saw it at Gartner IOCS. That has to be amazing for you as a principal technologist, somebody that represent technology, to have people that want to engage, that don't think it's a burden or don't sigh when you walk in the door, where they're actually really excited to see you because they know they're going to be able to talk about cool stuff and that you're going to be there and Pure's going to be there to solve their problems. It's a huge eye-opener.
It's been a pleasant surprise for me. I'm used to the NetApp guy. Excuse me. I'm used to the VMware folks being treated like this before pre-Broadcom, because Broadcom, we don't know what's going to happen yet, right? So we're still sorting all that out. But it used to be when the VMware folks showed up, everyone wanted to talk to them because there was always a new feature coming out. There was always something new at VMware. I found in my other manufacturers, you're here to buy sell me a new array because my support's up. That's what you're here for, right? It's been 5 years. It's time for a new array. Support tends to be weak, but at Pure, it's very different. We have great support. Our net promoter score is, what is it now? 84.6? Did I get it backwards?
In the low 80s, yeah,
Low
it kind
80s.
of hovers around there, but it's substantial.
That is unbelievable. That is the highest in the industry for an infrastructure company. And it is incredibly indicative of how we treat our customers. One, it goes down back to what I said before. If you have Evergreen, we can't ignore you. We can't just show up every 5 years and ask for a quote. It doesn't work that way. We're going to be back in 3 years at minimum to give you stuff for free, right? That's one. And number two, our support is awesome. People tell me they look forward to calling support. What in the world does that even mean? I don't know how to parse those words in my brain, but they love it. They love the simplicity, they love the performance, they love the uptime, the lack of tech debt, right? And our customers, this is to me is strange, our customers tend to be evangelistic. Most of our customers want to get on the phone and talk to other people about how cool Pure is. I love that. As a principal technologist, I'm like, well, you mean you're going to do my job for me? Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm
So
sitting through that right now with Accelerate, Rich, where we have too many customers that want to come and participate in sessions with us. And then it's not, not little guys. There's a lot of substantial names. So that makes it really, really fun. Well, hey, thanks, buddy. I've got to wrap and actually jump to another call around Accelerate that I'm a little bit late for, but I love that you put a nice bow on that and we circle back to the not tolerated but loved. Hey, where can people find you out there? Probably LinkedIn. I know I've bumped into you there. Do you have another
LinkedIn,
social media
I'm
presence?
rich.barlow at LinkedIn. That's the best way to get me. I'm not a real social media maven. I'm not one of you marketing awesome people. But LinkedIn's the easiest way to find me.
Okay, awesome. Well, reach out. Rich is a great resource, as is the entire principal technologist team that JD has built and is running. It was great to have you on, my friend. Let's do it again. It sounded like we came up with at least two other episode ideas that we could navigate into, and let's check in again in a few months and maybe get some more of your experiences. But I'd love to go deeper into that cloud conversation. That's one that we need to do here.
I'm looking forward to it, Rob. I'm sorry to make you late.
It's okay. I don't mind. This was tons of fun. This is the most fun part of my job, is getting to do these things with people like you. So, thank you for that. Thanks, Rich, for spending some time on the Pure Report today, and thank you out there for listening to this episode. Please keep telling colleagues, tell friend, and share the goodness, and we will keep bringing the great guests like Rich on to the program. And with that, we will wrap for Pure Storage and Rich Barlow. This is Rob Ludeman saying, don't look back, something might be gaining on you.